The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Talk 1230 WYTS, its staff, management, or parent company, Clear Channel. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of receiving an actual dental exam. Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. Good morning. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Thank you for joining me today. And lo and behold, the sun did come up this morning, even though the Buckeyes did not fare well. Yesterday, the sun came up, and we still love our Buckeyes. They're welcome back in town, and we'll get them next week. So, not to worry. Today, we're going to be continuing last week's show, which was about the history of dentistry. And we will pick up where we left off, which will be beginning the 19th century. But we're going to do that in a little bit, because before we get to that, I want to go over some announcements and talk about some other things. So, one is, don't forget that I am at, or me and a couple staff members are at the NBC4 Health and Lifestyle Expo today. It is from 11 to 5. It's free to get in. It's in Exhibit Hall C at the Columbus Convention Center. Yesterday we were there, had a great time. We're in the fashion and runway section, which I know seems a little strange, because this Health and Lifestyle Expo is about being healthy and having screenings done. You can have a flu shot, you can be screened for prostate cancer, that sort of thing. But since my practice is primarily focused, or at least my favorite part of it, is cosmetic dentistry, and I consider cosmetic dentistry, or rather people who have had it, changing their lifestyle. I mean, it changes your life. And I like to think of myself as changing lives one smile at a time. So, we are in that part of the exhibit, and yesterday we were a part of an ambush makeover. The folks there went out into the crowd and ambushed somebody and asked them if they would be interested in having a makeover. We performed Zoom whitening. Rachel is the person's name. Nice girl. And one of those people that has had some natural beauty, but it was able to be brought to the forefront by having this makeover. So we did Zoom whitening, and then she was whisked off to one of the salons about six blocks away, had her hair done, and then brought back and had makeup done. And then the local designers worked together to provide an outfit for her. And then at about 4:30, which is 30 minutes before it ended, she went up on stage and walked the catwalk, and it was really cool. In fact, when we went back, me and one of my hygienists went back to, behind the curtain to ask if we could get a picture together. We had to wait because she was being asked by somebody who owns a company of some sort if she would model for them. So we've already changed the life, as far as I can tell. Anyway, very much, very cool, very fun. And come out and see us. Exhibit Hall C, Columbus Convention Center. All right, now, don't forget that you might remember that we had a golf outing, and we were raising money for the Buddy Walk. And what we do is we sponsor one of our patients, Libby Turner, and we formed a team called Libby's Tooth Buds. If you go to the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio's website, and that is www.dsaco.net. And it basically is short for Down Syndrome Association Central Ohio, if you're trying to remember, or you couldn't understand what I was saying. Type, if you're looking for, you know, you go to where it says 2008 Buddy Walk, and if you click on that, it gives you a spot where you can search for a team. And if you type in the word Libby or Libby's with no apostrophe, it will come up. Currently, it says we've only raised $25, but that's because we have yet to deliver the check. We now have a final tally on what we raised. We raised $1,420, and we are going to be getting that to those folks soon in the name of Libby's Tooth Buds. And we hope that our listeners will consider going to that website and making a donation so that we can move on up the board of the top teams. Right now, we're not in the top 10, but I expect we will be very soon. One last thing, and that is my staff and I will be participating in the Women's Expo, and that takes place December 6th and 7th, so there's another opportunity to come out and meet us and see some of the things that we do, see some before and after photos, just kind of, well, for those of you that I have yet to meet, put a face to the name. I'm sorry, put a face to the voice. What am I saying? And and you can see kind of what we're all about and see how I go about my cosmetic makeovers. So also, we want to let you know that listeners on the show today, the first 5 callers will receive free tickets to the Women's Expo. So our number here is 821-1230, 821-1230. And also, you can send us emails if you have guesses to our Dr. Kvitko question of the day. You can send us an email to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. Or you can call that number, and while you're getting free tickets, you can also ask a question or give your guess. Now, I guess I need to tell you what the question of the day is so that you'll know what to guess. And that is, a survey of general dentists, what percent of general dentists listed cosmetic dentistry as their favorite tool? All right? Remember, the general dentists, what percent of general dentists listed cosmetic dentistry as their favorite tool? And we will take your guesses and we'll give out the answer later on in the show. So like I said at the beginning, today is the History of Dentistry Part 2. And the reason it's Part 2 is because we just didn't have time to get through everything. I mean, we went through the Renaissance Age, the Middle Ages, the 18th century, and basically ran out of time. So, also, I want to let people know that this show and all of the other shows that we've done is available by podcast. And, in fact, I forgot to mention that last week, so I want to make sure I get it out there today. To listen to a podcast of the show, you go to www.talk1230wyts.com. That's www.talk1230wyts.com. When you get there, hold your mouse over the on-air button, which is kind of like left side, third of the way down. And the names of the on-air talent show up. My name is at the bottom there. There's like third from the bottom. Click on that. Takes you to my page. In the middle of the page, under the smile, it says, click here to go to podcast page. Once you've done that, all of the shows show up. And all you have to do is left-click on the word listen to whichever show you prefer. All right. And so if you have a show that you think is especially interesting and you want to send it to a friend, just send them information on the how to do the podcast. So today, like I said, we're going to start with the 19th century and work our way forward. One of the things that where we left off was, I'll just mention the last couple, which was the reclining dental chair was invented in 1832 by a gentleman by the name of James Snell. And then in 1833 through 1850, two brothers from France known as the Crocours introduced amalgam filling material in the U.S. And that was the beginning, I guess, if you will, of the Amalgam Wars, 1833. It's still being discussed today. And, I'm one of those people that personally think amalgam restorations are fine. And the study that made us think that maybe they weren't was done in about 1985. It was done in Canada. Nothing against Canadian dentists. I think they're great. And as you know, I visited Canada and interviewed a couple dentists on a previous show. But the particular study that supposedly gave amalgam a bad name was very flawed, and so I'm one of those people that I still place amalgam restorations. I have them in my mouth. On the other hand, if you don't want them, that's fine with me, too. I would place tooth-colored, as long as people understand that the tooth-colored ones that just don't last quite as long, and they do cost a little more. So, moving forward a little bit in history, in 1839, the American Journal of Science, the world's first dental journal, began publication. Now, this next one you might not realize or wonder why there hasn't affected at all, but in 1839, A lot of people know this. Charles Goodyear invented the vulcanization process for hardening rubber. And that resulted in vulcanite, which was an inexpensive material that could be easily molded to the mouth, and it made an excellent base for false teeth, and it was soon adopted by dentists. So in 1864, the molding process for vulcanite dentures was patented. But anyway, a little side note is the dental profession fought the onerous licensing fees for the next 25 years. So, you know, dentists, once that was patented, had to pay fees to Charles Goodyear, and they didn't like that, of course. 1840, Horace Hayden and Chapin Harris established the world's first dental school, the Baltimore College of Dental Surgery, and they originated the Doctor of Dental Surgery degree, DDS. In 1923, that school, the Baltimore College of Dental Surgery, emerged with the University of Maryland School of Dentistry. So that's pretty cool. I did not realize that Baltimore was the site of the first dental school. In 1840, the American Society of Dental Surgeons, the world's first national dental organization, was founded. That organization happened to dissolve in 1856, but they're still credited as being the first back in 1840. And then back in 1841, 1 year later, Alabama enacted the very first Dental Practice Act, which regulated dentistry in the United States. So, I've talked before on the show about how we in this country come to expect our agencies, our elected officials, our government, to protect us from things like unscrupulous operators, unsafe materials, and that came up in our show where we're talking about the fact that there may be more lead in crowns that are made in China and other places offshore. And I was actually interviewed on Channel 10 television and in the Dispatch, and my comment was, we expect to be protected. We are willing in this country to pay a little extra for the things that we buy and services we receive in exchange for knowing that they're safe and that there's some type of a licensing procedure. So, 1841 is when that all began. 1844, Horace Wells, a Connecticut dentist, discovered that nitrous oxide could be used as an anesthetic or an anesthesia and successfully used it to conduct several extractions in his private practice. He also conducted the first public demonstration of its use as an anesthetic in 1845. However, that particular demonstration is considered to be a failure because the patient cried out during the operation. In 1846, another dentist and student of Wells, William Morton, takes credit for the discovery when he conducts the first successful public demonstration of the use of ether as an anesthesia for surgery. Crawford Long, a physician, later claims he used ether as an anesthetic in an operation as early as 1842, but he did not publish his work. All right, now, I want you to take note of something that I just mentioned here, and it maybe just went over everybody's head. The very first person to use general anesthesia was a dentist, not a physician. Likewise, the very first person to use local anesthesia was a dentist, not a physician. And that's something that I think people don't realize. It's also one of the reasons why, to this day, dentists have the right to prescribe any medication that a physician can prescribe, with the caveat that it be for dental use. So, hey, when we come back, we're going to keep moving forward through the calendar, talk about a little bit of folklore, and try to make this as interesting as we can. It can get dry, I guess, at times. Anyway, you're listening to Dentally Speaking here on Talk 1230 WYTS. We will be right back. Talk 1230 WYTS. Good morning. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Thank you for joining me. It's a great day out there. It looks like it's going to be a very, very nice, very, very gorgeous day, actually. Luckily, we are not experiencing the rain that they did down in the Gulf. And I know the earlier reports were that rain was going to come up and get us as well. But it looks like it's staying north of us and dropping rain in the Chicago area. So, Columbus is just turning out to be a great place to live, isn't it? We don't get earthquakes. We don't get mudslides. We don't get wildfires. We don't get hurricanes. I don't know. It just seems like we have a very well-kept secret here. All right, now we were talking about the history of dentistry. Oh, and the question of the day, we had a couple emailed guesses. I'm sorry, one was email, one was a phone call. Lucy from Groveport guessed 69% of general dentists listed cosmetic dentistry as their favorite tool. Lucy, thank you for your guess. That's a little high, though. Ida called in from Columbus and guessed 51%. That is also not correct. That's very close to, I don't know, 50%, kind of like when the weatherman said 50% chance of rain. You wonder why they even bothered, huh? Because we could all do that without going to meteorology school. Okay, now back to the history of dentistry. We are up to 1855, and Robert Arthur originated the cohesive gold foil method, which allowed dentists to insert gold into a cavity with very little pressure. Now, foil is fabricated by annealing, which is a process of passing gold through a flame, making it soft and malleable. This is interesting because I actually did a gold foil for my board exam back in 1980. I did a gold foil. It was actually on my dad. And this is really neat because what it is it's so soft that you take these thin, very thin layers of foil. I mean, they would blow away in the wind. And you push them into a shape in the tooth that you've created where you take out the decay. And because it's so pure and so soft, it actually welds one layer to the next. It's actually like welding at room temperature. It's pretty neat. The reason we don't do it much anymore is because of cost. And in fact, recently cost of gold has gone way up. And so I remember just recently I did a gold crown and I think my lab bill was three times of what it had been. Kind of caught me off guard. Forgot to pass that along to the patients. So, anyway, good for them. All right, now, in 1859, 26 dentists met in Niagara Falls, New York, and formed the American Dental Association. So, the American Dental Association, as we know it today, started in 1859. 1864, a gentleman by the name of Sanford C. Barnum, I don't think he was related to P.T. Barnum, developed the rubber dam. Now, the rubber dam is a device made of a piece of elastic rubber, and it's fitted over a tooth by means of something to hold it down, a weight or something, which solved the problem of isolating a tooth for the oral cavity. Now, these are used oftentimes during root canal procedures. They're not used in all procedures. It can be kind of nice for the patient, and some people don't like them. They feel like it makes them gag. But 1864. Now, in 1866, a woman by the name of Lucy Beeman Hobbs graduated from the Ohio College of Dental Surgery, becoming the first woman to earn a dental degree. So in these days of where we have Sarah Palin as a potential vice president, and we had Hillary Clinton running to hopefully be president, women are in the spotlight, and it was 1866, the very first woman graduated from the Ohio College of Dental Surgery, so that's pretty cool. Ohio put out the very first woman dentist. 1867, the Harvard University Dental School, which was the first university-affiliated dental institution, was founded. The school called its degree the Dentare Medicinae Doctorae, DMD, creating a continuing semantic controversy of DDS versus DMD. Used to be DDS was pretty much all you thought of when you thought of a dentist, but some of the East Coast Ivy League schools decided that they would name theirs DMD. It's the exact same degree, same privileges, and it's just semantics. So, in case you were wondering, that's the deal there. 1869, Dr. Robert Tanner Freeman graduated from the Harvard University Dental School and became the first African-American to earn a dental degree. That's pretty cool also. Now, that was 1869, so that was only, 3 years after the first woman. And I'm going to skip down a little bit, skip forward, because in 1890, which was 21 years later, Ida Gray was the first African-American woman to earn a dental degree. And she graduated from the University of Michigan School of Dentistry. So kudos to Michigan. They have the first African-American woman earning a dental degree back in 1890. So 1871, a gentleman by the name of James Morrison patented the very first commercially manufactured foot treadle dental engine. It was inexpensive. It was basically, it was a pedal that Lakewood had been used for sewing machines. And mechanized tool supplies dental burrs with enough speed to cut enamel and dentin smoothly and quickly. And it revolutionized the practice of dentistry. Now, the rheostat was just how hard you were pumping. I don't know if at the end of the day people were as good in, if things were as good as at the beginning of the day when the dentist might have been a little more awake and a little more full of vigor. Also in 1871, an American named George F. Green received a patent for the first electric dental engine, a self-contained motor and handpiece. So that's pretty interesting that the it was the same year. All right, now, we're up against a break. Remember, you can call us at 821-1230 or send us an email to dentallyspeaking@yahoo.com. I'm sorry, dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. And the first five callers will receive free tickets to the Women's Expo December 6th and 7th. We'll be right back.
Make me smile.
Talk 1230 WYTS, welcome back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, and I'm general dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Thank you for joining me today. We are talking about the history of dentistry, and when we left off, we were talking about 1871, about how both the first foot-treadle dental engine and the first electric dental engine, a self-contained motor and handpiece, had been patented. 1877, the Wilkerson chair, which was the first pump-type hydraulic dental chair, was introduced. A lot of people out there remember that. The dentist would, you know, crank this thing up. It was a lot like a barber chair, except it would recline. In the 1880s, the collapsible metal tube revolutionized toothpaste manufacturing and marketing. Dentifrice had been available only in liquid or powder form, and it was usually made by individual dentists and sold in bottles or porcelain pots or paper boxes. Tube toothpaste, in contrast, is mass-produced in factories, mass-marketed, and sold nationwide. In 20 years, it became the norm. By 1880, by the way, which is the same year of this toothpaste tube, 28 dental schools had been established. And so things were moving forward pretty rapidly now. In 1887... Stowe and Eddy Dental Laboratory, the first successful industrial-type laboratory in the United States, opened in Boston, marking the ascendancy of the modern commercial dental lab. The earliest known dental laboratory in the United States was Sutton and Rayner, which opened in New York City around 1854. Now, I don't know what I would do without my dental lab techs. I would pretty much be lost. I mean, in dental school, we learn how to do our own lab work, don't get me wrong. I can make dentures, and when I was first out of dental school, and I opened a practice from scratch, and I didn't have that many patients, wasn't that busy yet, didn't really think I could afford to pay a dental lab, so I decided, and I know what you do when you make a denture, by the way, is after you've created the wax version, you invest it in plaster in a mold, a brass flask, and then it's put into a press, and you take that, and you put it in boiling water, and that melts out the wax, and then you can open up your mold and put the acrylic in there, and the acrylic is not self-curing. It has to be cured, and so what you do after putting the acrylic in and closing up the mold and putting it in a press is you put that in 168-degree water for 8 or 9 hours. So I figured out with my industrial strength thermometer, I guess, that a crock pot was perfect. So I commandeered my wife's crock pot, and I made my own dentures at home. Didn't have to pay the lab. She will never use that crock pot again. But anyway, it worked when I needed it to. But now, obviously, I rely on my dental lab techs, and I'm on the phone with them often. I was even at the one's house last evening dropping off a case and talking to him about it. By 1890... almost 100 dental societies had been established. Now, back in 1890, Willoughby Miller, an American dentist in Germany, noted the microbial basis of dental decay in his book, Microorganisms of the Human Mouth. This generates an unprecedented interest in oral hygiene and starts a worldwide movement to promote regular toothbrushing and flossing. So, regular toothbrushing and flossing dates back to 1890. On a side note, my son is a microbiologist. He got his PhD from Cornell University just this past summer, and in fact, that was the day that I was out, and Beth DePonte was my guest host. So, anyway, all right, 1895, Wilhelm Röntgen, a German physicist, discovered the X-ray. Now, I ask people a lot, just for fun, what does X-ray stand for? And it's one of those questions that maybe would be great for, you know, are you smarter than a fifth grader, or who wants to be a millionaire, or whatever. The answer is, Wilhelm Röntgen, he didn't know what he found, so he just named it X. And that's it. It's that simple. He just didn't know, so he called it X. In 1896, there was a prominent New Orleans dentist, C. Edmund Kells, who took the first dental X-ray of a living person in the United States. That was 1896. The first dental X-ray was taken, and X-rays were only discovered a year before that, in 1895. 1899, Edward Hartley Engel classified the various forms of malocclusion. He was credited with making orthodontics a dental specialty. So orthodontics was pretty much born in 1899. He also established the first school of orthodontics, called the Engel School of Orthodontia, in St. Louis in 1900, which was the first orthodontic society, or rather, and the first orthodontic society, called the American Society of Orthodontia, which is 1901, and the first dental specialty journal, the same gentleman, Edward Hartley Engel, and that was in 1907. So the American Orthodontist, 1907, is when that was established. Not being an orthodontist, I'm not sure if that journal is still in publication, but I think it is. So we've now reached 1900, and in 1900, 57 dental schools existed by that year. So remember, it was there were only 28 back in, I think it was 1880. So there were 28 dental schools in 1880, and that number had doubled by 1900. So 1903, Charles Land devised the porcelain jacket crown. I'm actually amazed to know that porcelain jacket crowns have been around since 1903, because they didn't really come into great use until my dental practicing career. And what a jacket crown is one that has no metal inside. It's strictly porcelain, fabricated to be almost like a, you know, like a sock put over a tooth. And it took a while, I guess, for the properties of the material to be improved to the point where we could use it on a regular basis. And I know that regular porcelain jacket crowns, you can see right through them, so if the tooth underneath was dark, it still wouldn't look very good. And so it probably took until we came up with the luminous porcelain core, which is also porcelain, but a little bit more opaque, to block out the discoloration of the tooth behind, before we could use porcelain on a regular basis. So when we come back, we'll continue this. We're up to, what, 1903? Remember that you can call 821-1230 if you have a question or you would like to make a guess to our question of the day. You can email guesses to dentallyspeaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. And we will be right back after the break here on Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Good morning. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Sunday. We're talking about the history of dentistry, and earlier in the show, I gave out a question of the day, Dr. Kvitko's question of the day, and that was, what percent of general dentists listed cosmetic dentistry as their favorite tool? During the break, we had an email guest, Elijah, wrote in that her guess is 20, well, I assume it's a her. Elijah, is that a, I don't know. Anyway, Elijah sent in a guess of 25%. I've been informed Elijah is a he. I don't know, threw me. Anyway, that is actually not correct. I'm going to go ahead and give you the answer. The answer is 36%. So just over a third of dentists, general dentists, list cosmetic dentistry as their favorite tool. And anybody who's been around me more than about 3 minutes knows that it is my favorite tool as well. Okay, so let's get back to the history of dentistry. And back in 1907, this one's especially interesting to me, a gentleman by the name of William Taggart invented the lost wax casting machine. This allowed dentists to make precision cast fillings. Okay, now what they mean by a cast filling would be a gold onlay or a gold inlay, or actually gold crowns. And jewelers out there know what we're talking about when we say the lost wax process also. Excuse me. And what it is you make whatever you want to make in gold, you first make it in wax. And this could be silver, it doesn't just have to be gold. In dentistry, though, it's typically gold. So you make one out of wax, and jewelers can buy pre-made patterns that are, it's a ring, and it has all the prongs and everything that you need, or where you'll put stones and stuff. And you can alter it by adding wax in certain places on your own. You can buy little pieces of rope wax, tiny little pieces of rope wax, to create your own designs. And so once you have this in wax, you basically attach a handle to it, which is a piece of plastic on one end, and you kind of stick it on that. Think of that as the handle. That goes down into a little base, and in a rubber base, and then there's a sleeve slit over top, a metal sleeve, and investment plaster is poured down inside. Once that is hardened, you pull off the little rubber base from the metal sleeve, and that base had a conical shape to it, which essentially creates kind of like a funnel. And so you now have this plaster that is surrounded by a metal sleeve with a funnel opening at one end that goes into a hole in the plaster, and up inside that hole, by the way, is this wax pattern that you have created. Could be a ring, could be a crown. And you put that in an oven known as a burnout oven. After so many minutes, you take it out, because now the wax and that plastic handle have melted away, and you now have a hollow piece of investment plaster where the inside chamber is the shape of your crown or the shape of your ring, if you're making a ring or a charm. And that is put into a spin caster, a holder, spring-loaded holder. Gold or metal or whatever is melted, and you let this thing spin around, and the gold or metal shoots into that hole and goes up into the hollow portion of your plaster, and that is how we make crowns. That's how you make jewelry. And that was invented in 1907. Now, thinking back, I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, but I believe that the Wright brothers had their first flight in 1905, and I may be off by a year or two, but just to give you a little perspective as to where we are here in history. 1908 was a very big year for dentistry. A gentleman by the name of Green Vardaman Black, and dentists to this day know him as G.V. Black, the leading reformer and educator of American dentistry, published his monumental two-volume treatise called Operative Dentistry. It remains the essential clinical dental text, or remained that way, for 50 years. Dr. Black later developed techniques for filling teeth, standardizing operative procedures and instrumentation. He developed an improved silver amalgam, and he pioneered the use of visual aids for teaching dentistry. So, Dr. G.V. Black, 1908, very, very important figure in dentistry, and there are still seminars, and I believe there's an association or society that honors him each year through a scientific meeting. 1910, the first formal training program for dental nurses was established at the Ohio College of Dental Surgery by Cyrus M. Wright. The program was discontinued in 1914, though, mainly due to the opposition of Ohio dentists. And that's kind of interesting, but I've just been told that the first human flight, thank you very much for that, was 1903. So I was off by a couple of years, but right around the time that the lost wax process and dentistry was being published and being organized in the form of clinical texts was about 5 years after the first flight by the Wright brothers. So thank you very much for that. We are up against the break again, so we need to go be away for a couple minutes. Don't change the dial. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Smile a little smile for me, Rosemary.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS. And we're talking about the history of dentistry. And where we left off was the fact that the first formal training for dental nurses was established at the Ohio College of Dental Surgery by Cyrus M. Wright, and unfortunately discontinued 4 years later because Ohio dentists opposed it. Now, in 1911, the U.S. Army Dental Corps was established as the first armed services dental corps in the United States, and the Navy instituted its dental corps in 1912. 1913, Alfred C. Fones opened the Fones Clinic for Dental Hygienists in Bridgeport, Connecticut, the world's first oral hygiene school. Most of the 27 women graduates of the first class later were employed by the Bridgeport Board of Education to clean the teeth of school children. And what that did was greatly reduce the incidence of caries, decay, among these kids, and it gave impetus to the dental hygiene movement. Dr. Fones first used the term dental hygienist, and therefore became known as the father of dental hygiene. And I think that's pretty neat. Dental hygienists are very well respected in our society today, and they do a wonderful service. 1917, Irene Newman received the world's first dental hygiene license in Connecticut. So the first hygienist graduated apparently 4 years after that clinic was started, or the hygiene school was started. In 1923, the American Association of Dental Schools is established. Now, a lot of dental students are a member of this, the AADS, to this day, and they work together with their dental school administration and with each other to promote dental health and improve dental education for future dentists. In 1924, the American Dental Assistance Association was founded by Juliette Southard and her female colleagues. Female dental assistants were first hired in the 19th century when, quote, lady in attendance, end quote, signs were routinely seen in the windows of dental offices. Their duties included chairside assistance, instrument cleaning, inventory, appointments, bookkeeping, and reception. I don't know what I would do without my dental assistants. I would actually be lost. I'd just sit in the corner and cry, probably. I mean, in dental school, we learn how to work alone, because you have to. They don't have assistants for all of the dental students. But in the real world, out in private practice, I would just be so slow, and it would just be, oh boy, I just don't know what I would do. So if any of my dental assistants are listening, I really, really appreciate you guys. Same with my dental hygienists. In 1928, the National Board of Dental Examiners was established. That is the group that tests newly graduated dentists to see if they're competent to receive licenses. And it's a very, very stressful time for dental students or newly graduated dentists. Very, very stressful. And to this day, we work on live patients. And that means that a person can flunk their test if it's something as simple as the patient who volunteered to be treated doesn't come or comes late. The American Board of Orthodontics, which was the world's first dental specialty board, was founded in 1930. Now, between 1930 and 1943... Frederick S. McKay, a Colorado dentist, was convinced that brown stains or mottling on his patients' teeth were related to their water supply. His research verified that drinking water with high levels of naturally occurring fluoride was associated with low dental caries and a high degree of mottled or white chalky spots on the enamel. By the early 1940s, H. Trinley Dean determined that the ideal level of fluoride in drinking water to substantially reduce decay without mottling was 1 part per million. So, anyway, we are running up against the end of the show here. I find this very fascinating. I hope you guys do as well. Remember to come out and see us at the NBC4 Health and Lifestyle Expo. We're in the Fashion Mall area. And I believe today we're going to do another Zoom whitening. And tune in next week when I believe we're going to continue a little bit of this on topic, because honestly, we're only up to 1930. So thank you for listening and tuning in, and don't forget to go to the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio website and make a donation in the name of Libby's Tooth Buds, and we will see you next week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a wonderful, wonderful Sunday.